Mr. Goldberg.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Daryl Goldberg. I'm here on behalf of the appellate Benjamin Barry Kramer. This appeal, Your Honors, raises three issues that revolve primarily around Mr. Kramer's motion for an accounting. The court was correct in one respect, that Mr. Kramer has additional interests that have in the government's possession that have not been accounting for, but the district court erred when they concluded that the government forfeited approximately $1.9 million his interest through a Gilbert family settlement as a substitute asset, when that was already in possession of the government. And a careful look at that order, it forfeits nothing as to Mr. Kramer. But even if the court were to believe that was appropriate, the government never forfeited Kramer's entire interest in LCP or his other assets that remain in the possession of the government. The $1.9 million referenced in the district court's order is only a small portion of the vast amount of Kramer's interest in the government possession. But even if the court were to find that they could forfeit all of this, or it is somehow no longer ripe for challenge, the district court also erred by refusing to conduct a complete accounting of Kramer's full interest in LCP and his other personal property, simply because the court deemed it difficult or that it was unsuccessfully litigated in a different district court.
So, I would like you to pause on that for a moment, because this matter, I'm not sure what to call it, this thing, has been under litigation for decades in courts across the country. Certainly the 11th Circuit would probably run in horror if you come and file another lawsuit there. They have visited and visited this. And so one of the questions, one of the many questions that bothered the district court judge here, was to what extent either should he, assuming he had the power to do it, or could he revisit deals that had settled other aspects of the interests in these properties or in their income, or, you know, broadly speaking, their interests. How much does this accounting reopen? Does this district judge now become, in a sense, the MDL judge for the Kramer matter? I mean, that would be a very ambitious statement, especially for something that never went through an MDL sort of process.
Well, Your Honor, to answer your question, the 11th Circuit made clear that nothing was forfeited as to Mr. Kramer in that court.
Only as to the Gilbert interest, though. I mean, it resolved lots of other interests. There was only so much left over, I think.
There was nothing resolved as to Mr. Kramer. They said that it's void in the context of Mr. Gilbert's case, but they said there was never a forfeiture order, not even a single order entered upon conviction in Mr. Kramer's case, that the court essentially retroactively tried to fix the mistake that was made when there was no forfeiture judgment entered, nothing was presented before a jury. The words of the 11th Circuit suggest that they held nothing as to Mr. Kramer. And so there's nothing for him to complain about over there. And the government's suggestion that we ought to be litigating in the Southern District of Florida doesn't make much sense, because the government, one, they didn't challenge jurisdiction in the district court, but two, they also availed itself of the jurisdiction. They are suggesting that they settled in an ancillary proceeding with the Gilbert Family Trust in the Southern District of Illinois. They chose to address these issues here because perhaps they thought, or it's actually not even to speculate whether they thought they had a valid order based out of the 11th Circuit or not, or in the Southern District of Florida. But the other thing is that 21 USC 853L gives courts authority in any jurisdiction to address these forfeiture matters of property, whether the property is located in California or whether there's been some sort of litigation in the state of Florida. But the point is that nothing has ever been forfeited. The only valid order of forfeiture to Mr. Kramer is the $60 million in personam judgment. And we don't contest that here. There's a pending motion in the district court about the collectability on the judgment at this point, but none of his interests in LCP have ever been forfeited. And even if this court were to believe that this 2003 order through the Gilbert Family Trust even though if you follow the logic of the 11th Circuit, he was a nominee, had no ownership interest. But even if somehow that should have been forfeitable to Mr. Kramer, the problem is that he had no standing to appeal something that was entered in an ancillary proceeding. He had no standing to participate. He did not participate because he did not have notice of it. It was simply just a settlement agreement that was executed by the judge in that case.
But you know, Mr. Goldberg, one of the problems, one of the many problems with this case is that it's practically a history lesson. I mean, most of these things happened so long ago, and various pieces of the various assets, interests of various parties have been adjudicated over the year. And maybe one thing it would help me, at least, if you focused on, since the government relies on this a lot, is this September 2003 settlement agreement in the Southern District of Illinois, which seems to be about the Gilbert properties, forfeits as substitute property, the profits of LCP, which is one of the owners of this bicycle club. And that takes us directly to Kramer, because Kramer has a retained interest in LCP. But why doesn't that just retire this? And why is the government not right that you're really trying to reopen things that have long since been settled?
The first time Mr. Kramer ever heard that $1.9 million was forfeited as a substitute asset, a valuation, was in this motion for an accounting. He didn't participate because he couldn't participate. He was in prison, and he was unrepresented, but that's besides the point for just a moment.
Well, he's serving a life sentence, as I recall. I assume he's still in prison, right?
Correct. Yeah. But so it's an ancillary proceeding. It's the execution of a settlement agreement, and he can't participate by definition. But also, if a careful look at it, only appears to call it substitute property, something that is the ownership interest of Michael Gilbert. Michael Gilbert is a nominee. He doesn't have an ownership interest. And that's the point. There's nothing to complain about in 2003, even if he would have known about it. And so the government suggestion that he should have complained about it then and that we're challenging that particular order is not true. There was nothing to complain about then. There's nothing to complain about up and until this very point, when the first time $1.9 million surfaces is in 2019 or 2020. So
so how is it possible, though? I mean, these convictions for different crimes, okay? 1988 in the Southern District of Illinois, 1990 in the Southern District of Florida, and here we are in 2021, pushing 2022, trying to figure out what he might be entitled to, either in terms of return of assets from... I gather what you're really after is the profits that the bicycle club generated over the years, or you know, those kinds of sources of value, not these smaller things. But it all seems too late.
Well, but it can't be too late, because there's never an order that ever divested him of anything. What should have happened, what could have happened, is that they should have taken this to a jury and have a jury make a determination on a particularized asset instead of seeking an in personam money judgment, which is what they did. And they didn't do that. He would have had a right to a jury trial. He does have a right to a jury trial before the conclusion of the criminal case. And they can't now later forfeit it as a substitute asset, because it is not a substitute asset by definition.
So it's your position then that there's just no time limit whatsoever for people to bring these cases?
In this particular case, there is not a time limit, particularly because he's never been put on notice. He never learned of anything like this $1.9 million figure until later.
What notice did he not receive? He knows about the bicycle club. He knows about the corporations.
But
he knows about his assets.
But nothing that was ever entered in this case purported to strip him of anything. So according to him, he thought that this whole entire time, if the government's in possession of these assets, that it ought to be credited towards his in personam money judgment. And he learned from a news article in a magazine in 2015, hence the pro se filing of his lawsuit, that, whoa, Eugene Fisher, his co-defendant, who, by the way, was the only one who was given notice, direct notice of this 2003 order, started civil litigation that ultimately led to his release from prison. And then it led to his co-defendant, Mr. Lanier, in the same instance. And so that was the very first time it reared its head. And then he filed a lawsuit, We amended that lawsuit. We ended up with a motion for an accounting in front of Judge Gilbert, and that's why we're
and
here.
And then it moved there over. I know. He puts it over in the criminal docket.
Correct. So, Your Honor, just to talk about this, the Honeycutt, the United States Supreme Court makes clear that an asset that could be directly forfeitable by definition cannot be a substitute asset. You can't forfeit something that was already in the government's possession that was directly forfeitable that has also been tainted. And the definition of a substitute asset is that it's something that is untainted, innocent, and clean, and it must meet the strict criteria of 853P, also 32.2, to be forfeited at a later time. The government talks about relation back. There is no relation back to anything because there is no valid order of forfeiture to a particular asset, the tainted asset. You can't relate back to a substitute asset. It's that retroactive vesting only
takes place. But their relation back argument goes all the way back to the fact that it was his drug money that was used to get the club launched.
And that's a determination for the jury to find that nexus prior to conviction. And that's not what happened in this case. And that's the point. They should have done that and could have done that, but they didn't do it. They hold nothing. The case in Florida talks about the bike club and not LCP. So the 11th Circuit makes very clear they hold nothing as to Kramer. They're sitting on millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and an accounting is appropriate. And I'll just say that I want to reserve some time for rebuttal, but we believe that the standard of review here is de novo. It's not. Even if this accounting is an equitable remedy, there's also balance in law, a legal remedy. The entire point of the accounting was to determine what is not known, how much of his interests have been collected and should be applied to his forfeiture to the extent they can, and that's also a matter of law. And all of these conclusions that Judge Gilbert made underlying his decision is to allow this accounting is that should be reviewed de novo, statutory interpretations, these settlement agreements, orders, everything of that like. And I'd like to reserve, if there's no questions, I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal, remaining time.
Certainly, counsel. Thank you. Mr. Reed.
Good morning, judges, and may it please the court, Peter Reed for the United States. Because the district court accurately accounted for the forfeitures in Kramer's criminal case below, the court should affirm. It should reject appellate's invitation to relitigate matters that were settled long ago. And I think there are four sets of problems with those arguments. First problem is an issue of waiver and forfeiture. This court's cases make it very clear when a case when a criminal defendant wishes to challenge a forfeiture, the right place to do that is on direct appeal. There was no direct appeal either back in the 90s on the basis of the criminal judgment or in 1996 or 2003.
But you know, Mr. Reed, that's not quite what I understand Mr. Kramer to be arguing right now. He certainly could have challenged the whole part of the $60 million forfeiture had he chosen to on his direct appeal. But what I take from this, sort of stepping back from these many legal proceedings, is that there was this organization in which he had some interest, the bicycle club, that was generating millions of dollars over the years. And he's saying, you know, I'd like to see where that went. Did the government just throw it into the treasury? You know, why doesn't that count for my $60 million forfeiture judgment? And maybe there's even more money than that around, so some of it might come to me. So what's wrong with that argument?
Judge, you know, I think we're moving down to the merits and the remedy problems with.
Well, I'm interested in that, if you wouldn't mind.
Right. No, I absolutely, Judge. And I think there's a factual problem and a legal problem here. The factual issue here is the question is whether the funds that were seized belong to the government under a relation back kind of doctrine or to the third party successors in interest.
So Mr. your Kramer's position would be if the funds, if it were, you know, if you just had found his stash of criminally acquired money, the government's mm-hmm. position is he just doesn't have an interest in that. That can't be used against his forfeiture because it's tainted. It just, the government takes it. It belongs to the government. Is that correct?
I'm not sure I'm following your question, Judge. I guess what I would say is this.
Well, what you were saying was because it was criminally derived, mm-hmm. it's not money he can then use to satisfy a forfeiture? I mean, I could understand a fine, but why not have to turn it over to the government as illegally obtained money?
So maybe it's easier to take it to flip this around and look at it this way. The interest that Cramer ever had in LCP was due to a loan that was made in the early 80s. That loan was paid off to Cramer in the late 80s. Right. At that point, he has no interest in LCP from 1986 through the present. The government has an interest in LCP through a relation back doctrine that dates to 1983 when that investment was first made. Cramer, as of 1986, has no interest in LCP. And this, I think, is the problem with the remedy problem with Cramer's arguments today. The assets that he's talking about that were forfeited in the Florida case belong either to the government through a relation back or to the third party successors of interest. There's no legal claim. There's no middle ground for it to belong to Cramer because that loan was paid off in 1986. At that point, he has no interest in LCP personally.
And if he has no interest in LCP, he also has no interest in the club because his only interest in the club was through LCP.
That's right, Judge. So the remedy problem here is perhaps one of those third-party successors of interest, like Mr. Gilbert, could have challenged that judgment in the Southern District of Florida, and in fact, he did. But Mr. Cramer really has no basis for doing that, and in fact, he didn't. He disclaimed his interest back in the 80s. In front of that Southern District of Florida court. When it comes to the proceedings in this court, that's a little different. That's the Gilbert entity remaining interest, that 9.1865. Now, the same remedy problem applies to that sub-interest, right? If the government has an interest, it's because it relates back to that original loan. Cramer doesn't have an interest as of 1986, even in that 9.1675. So
are you saying you should have taken a cross appeal? I need to find this, thought.
No, Judge. I think the point here is that whether it's the Florida case or the Illinois case, the arguments being made today by Mr. Cramer don't make any sense from a remedy perspective. He's arguing that the assets weren't his. If they weren't his, then they belong to a third-party successor in interest or to the government. In essence, he's asking that less money be attributed to his forfeiture balance. What the court found below is that there was this $1.9 million that was part of that 2003 forfeiture that could be attributable to Cramer through the relation back doctrine to 1983. So I started by saying that there are four sets of problems. I think that first one is a waiver of forfeiture problem, which is if you're going to challenge a forfeiture under Young, it's got to be done on direct appeal. The second problem, and I think it's related, is there is no statutory mechanism, the kind of collateral review that Mr. Cramer is seeking. He hasn't identified one here, and I don't think a motion for accounting is the kind of vehicle that can allow for the type of substantive challenges that Mr. Cramer is arguing in his brief.
Think there's any role, though, for an accounting just to see what money did the government collect, who did it belong to, how was it credited against various obligations to the government, whether it's a forfeiture judgment or whether it's some other type of obligation? Doesn't it seem that that's an appropriate and useful thing to happen?
Judge, I would say two things. One, I don't see a statutory or rule-based authorization for that kind of motion for accounting. All that I found is that the Second Circuit case in Tame, which suggested it may be an equitable remedy. When it comes to what the district court did below, I think that the accounting is 100% correct. If this is the balance of his forfeiture judgment in the Southern District of Illinois, it's certainly true that to the degree a motion for accounting is an acceptable, equitable remedy, the district court correctly limited itself to accounting for those forfeitures, right? There's a difference between saying, here's what's been seized, and saying, let's talk about whether those seizures were valid or invalid, which I think are the arguments Mr. Cramer is making on appeal. So I'd like to finally move on to, I think, what is the merits problems with Mr. Kramer's arguments, and I'll make this brief. My understanding from opposing counsel today is that his argument is that the property that was seized in 2003 was in fact tainted property, and therefore not substitute assets. It's the first time I've heard a defendant argue that the seized property was more tainted than the government was suggesting, but I think that that just confirms that the seizure was appropriate under either provision. As to the Florida RICO forfeiture, again, as you noted, Judge Wood, the 11th Circuit only had some parties before it. It was the Gilbert entities who were in front of the court, and so its holding applies to the question in front of it. What was being litigated there was the interest of the Gilbert entities in this 9.1675% interest in LCP, and that's the extent of that holding. If the court has no further questions, I'll sit down and urge the court to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Anything further, Mr. Goldberg?
Yes, please. Your Honors, no one is conceding that it's tainted. All I'm suggesting is that it's the government's position that these funds are tainted. So based on that, they cannot do anything with it as a substitute asset. That was my point. But the Judge Gilbert gave us an equitable remedy. The Tame case that counsel cites talks about if there's equitable remedies are available when there's no other adequate remedy at law and the equities favor the exercise of discretion. It's fundamentally unfair for the government to seize millions and millions and millions of dollars. And according to what we have before us, there's not a single valid order of forfeiture except for a in persona money judgment, which does nothing to affect Kramer's interest in LCP or other personal property that we don't know whether he had it comported with due process and notice. We don't know anything that happened to it. We're asking the government to simply give us that accounting, help us help the court make a determination about whether this judgment is satisfied, whether it can be satisfied, whether there is any excess that belongs to Mr. Kramer. But the government acts as one. Again, I believe if I understand counsel, he's trying to suggest that some of this stuff was litigated or ought to go back to Florida, and that's not the case. And again, there is no relation back doctrine because there's no valid order to relate back to. The 11th Circuit dealt with Kramer's purported interest in the bike club. Kramer had interest in LCP, not the bike club. It's void. It's void. The court makes clear that they obtained nothing as a result of the orders in that case. Whether Kramer appealed it or not, it's without legal significance. It's void ab initio, as if it never happened. In the eyes of the law, it's meaningless. And so it also dovetails to this 2003 order. That is premised on that order being valid, and it's not. The whole basis of that is the government took a position that to the extent it wasn't already forfeited in Florida, we ought to be able to do it in Illinois. And but even if you look at that entry of this order, it does nothing to affect Mr. Kramer at all. It's only the ownership interest, which doesn't even exist, of a nominee, in this case, Michael Gilbert or the Gilbert Family Trust. So what Mr. Kramer is asking, Your Honors, it's undisputed that the district court and the government agree that Kramer is the real owner, has a real interest in significant assets. We're simply asking for an appropriate accounting that either returns his interest to him, applies it to the forfeiture to an extent it's still collectible, and we ask you reverse and remand to do exactly that.
Thank you very much.